Hello, my fabulous radio listeners, and welcome to the
most fabulous ever?
The Millennium's most fabulous episode of Sex Talk. Dr. Sexopoulos and I, wow, it's a little loud in here, have a very, very special show in line for you. We have a special, the world's most special guest. For a Sex Talk first, we have someone who's actually an...
Sexpert.
A sexpert, an actual talented celebrity, someone who's neither, who I've neither had sex with, nor am I related to by blood or sexuality. Welcome. I want all of our listeners to welcome Virginia Vitstum. Are you there?
Yep.
Am I pronouncing your name right, by the way?
Vitstum.
And Virginia is a writer, a sex columnist for Salon, and a sexpert, international raconteur.
Celebrity.
Deep sea diver, and all around, and a delightful, delightful woman. Welcome to the show, Virginia. I mean, I'm actually a little bit nervous right now because, you know, last week we had to interview a bunch of field mice, and we're that desperate. And so thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Are you sure we haven't had sex?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I was going to talk to you about this. You know, this is actually very interesting, Virginia, because just a couple of weeks ago we were talking. I'm a gay man, right? And I've actually never even
really?
Had...
We've never brought this up before.
I've never mentioned this. And I've never had sex with a woman at all. And we were talking about the kind of woman that I would have to have sex with. And I'm thinking, Virginia, you might be it. Because,
wow.
Well, because...
I'm honored.
because it would have to be, like, as we were talking about, for a gay man's sort of first time, you know, I'd be sort of nervous. I wouldn't know what to do. I wouldn't know, like, what all of your little parts do. And so you'd have to sort of show me without bringing along a lot of emotional baggage. Like,
right, and as a sexpert, I know what all the parts do.
Well, that's excellent.
I'm your man.
Oh, this is...
That's exactly the kind of mental image you should give him, too.
So which one of us would be wearing the strap-on in that case?
You could go first.
but anyway, Virginia, it's a delight. It's a delight having you. And if our listeners are tuned to the Internet, they can go to salon.com and look up your name, which is spelled V-I-T-Z-H-U-M, right?
V-I-T-Z-T-H-U-M.
Oh, pardon me. So what's the URL where they would find? Would they just search for that name on
you
Salon?
You could search under that name.
V-I-T-Z-H-T-U-M.
T-H-U-M, and you'd get to my archive link, and that's where they all are.
Fantastic. It is spelled that way.
I'm glad we have the right person for the show, then. It wasn't some hilarious mix-up.
So on Salon, I was reading I read most of you had a bi-weekly column in Salon every other week.
Uh-huh.
And it was about your various sexcapades for the years, starting way back in 1999. Is that right?
The first thing I wrote for them was right when the... Star Report came out. So it was actually 98.
Wow. Oh, so
yeah, so did you ever find out the truth behind that mysterious, what was it, like footnote 63 or something?
Rimming!
The infamous oral anal genital contact footnote.
I know, it was.
So as a professional sexpert, unlike the amateurs we are here in Pittsburgh, like, you must have some kind of insider info. Do you know anything more on this?
I don't know anything more. I was just, everybody was kind of like, what's footnote? Whatever it was, 121 about.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, well.
I learned actually from the movie Scary Movie 2 that act is called tossing the salad. Or tossing.
What?
Like, so apparently Monica Clost, the way you'd use it in the idiom is Monica tossed President Clinton's salad.
She licked him.
What's wrong with the good old word rimming? Is that so 20th
tossing
century?
Tossing the salad doesn't even make sense.
I know. Like, it's not like there are things being thrown into the air. Or...
I'm sorry. Look, it's just what, you know, maybe I was lied to.
Don't blame DJ Corey. Blame popular media.
So if any of the callers in the tri-state area want to reach us, we're at area code 412-621-9728.
That was on Sex and the City a couple weeks ago.
Tossing?
That act. Yeah.
Really? What did they call it?
Analingus.
Oh, that's a good one, too.
So as a gay man, I don't know, I mean, I'm coming out from the show for the first time. I mean, like, you know, if I weren't able to perform analingus, life would not be worth living. But I didn't realize, what is it like in the straight world? I want you and Dr. Sexopoulos to field this question. Do like, straight men and women rim each other?
I'll hand this one off to our beloved guest.
I've been known to toss my own salad
when
I'm feeling flexible.
I haven't come across it that often, no. Mm. I'm not crazy about it. I never did it to anyone. I wasn't crazy about it when it was done to me.
Hmm.
know. Maybe I'm a prude.
Well, you know, so I...
How about Dr. Sexopolis?
Yeah, well, I mean, from my own experiences and experiences related to me, it's not uncommon. Like, it's, you know, the people who have anal sex certainly also do analingus. But that, you know, that subset of people isn't very large.
Isn't?
Is not, I don't think.
Among heteros.
Yeah.
See, yeah. Maybe I'm just going to stay gay. My gay world is much more exciting than your sad little straight world.
There's more anal action, no doubt about it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Well, Virginia, if you and I do get together, that's going to be like number one on my top 10.
All right, then I get to wear the strap on.
Actually, I prefer to be the salad tosser than the salad toss-e. So, you know, I find it just I find that whole area kind of erotically interesting. My producer is pushing his
putting his finger
toward the beep button. But no, I mean, it's just. I mean, partially maybe it's sort of the kind of perhaps the sort of taboo, the supposedly taboo notion of it. It's also kind of, you know, it has the area has kind of a musky aroma.
And you don't worry about ingesting feces?
It's so primal. Well, I mean, you know, I tend to hang out with people that bathe, you know, have good hygiene. So, no, I have no interest. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with that, but I personally have no interest in feces. But people, I think, that are kind of know that they're going to be doing things like that tend to be very clean in that area. So,
this actually brings up a question kind of tangentially that I wanted to ask you, Virginia. So I was wondering how has being a sex columnist, a sexpert, changed your own sex life? I mean, has it exposed you to, like, any new fetishes or acts that you subsequently kind of adopted and made part of your repertoire? Or have any of the men you've dated or been with, have they expressed anxiety that they might show up in your column if they didn't perform
Definitely
well?
Definitely the latter.
What?
Definitely the latter. I'm trying to think, did I? I mean, I did some things for columns. I mean, I would have probably not ever done, you know, calling up a phone sex line. I did that.
Right,
for
I remember that one.
I didn't keep doing that.
Although it did seem like you had a pretty good time in the column.
No, it was fun. I guess I didn't feel that motivated to do it again though.
But you said definitely the latter. That is, men you've dated or been with have been a little anxious about showing up.
Oh, it always comes up at a certain point. They're like, "You're not going to write about me, are you?" Or "You going to write about me?" Or yeah.
I find this kind of fascinating because actually, there's another person that we've interviewed on the show called John Cam. He's a regular, longtime friend of the show. He's got an internet web camera, and one time I visited him at his house, and I visited him with this kind of mixture of both intrigue and dread because I knew I was going to go. I was going there. I knew I was going to be on the camera. And I'm like, "Ooh, should I have sex with or jerk? I mean, masturbate, make jerky with John Cam?" And so I had this feeling of both titillation and fear of, like, becoming part of the public spectacle that was John Cam. So I'm wondering if...
Well, that would kind of be your choice whether to masturbate on camera.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, sometimes when you're in that situation...
But you could not.
You know, I've never dated or slept with sex columnists other than, of course, the...
You have not slept with me. I would have remembered.
I slipped roofies into your drink. So,
I have remembered your shriveled, pathetic member.
But thank you. But certainly once after the age of like 18 or 19, when I discovered, holy crap, like women talk about sex things in far more detail than men did, like that kind of put the fear of goddess into me, right? That like my every grunt,
did you say the fear of goddess?
Well, as opposed to the fear of God, right? Like, because that's about women.
I knew what he meant.
But like, you know, that my every move, my every... you know, misfiring or whatever would like become locker room fodder for the woman, you know, for this woman and her friends, like that kind of has put performance anxiety into me that's never disappeared. And that's just with normal women, like let alone like the superwoman with a audience of millions that you are. I guess that's why this interests me. It's all about my selfish needs.
I've definitely made a agreement with myself that I would. Actually, my ethics about it kind of – the bar kind of went up as I did it. First, I was like, I will never sort of intentionally humiliate anyone or even make anybody recognizable. But by the time I was into it. I actually got to the point where I was asking people, is it okay if I write about it, even though I'm going to disguise you? Because I wouldn't.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I wouldn't really want to be. I would find it hard to live with myself if it was kind of a tool of revenge or something mean. Yeah.
So. Right, right. I mean, I didn't mean to imply that you'd use it vindictively, but, you know.
But if you think about it, that's sort of a slippery slope, you know. Sort of, if you were going to, I mean, like you say, you were afraid of women.
Talking about me.
And saying mean things. You weren't afraid of them saying, he was great.
I think actually probably every man has this fear.
Sure.
And there's probably a lot of, like, male-on-female oral sex that goes on, like, just because of this fear. Like, well, I've got to make a good show. You got to make a good report for her friends.
Wow.
So, you know, performance anxiety isn't all bad.
I mean, I guess everybody wants to be good in bed, but is it specifically for the recap? Oh, that's interesting.
For the recap, I like that.
On this show, you can never tell when we're delving into the personal psychoses of my co-host.
I think that'd be more of a neurosis, but continue.
Your voices are hard to tell apart. Dr. Saxopoulos isn't James, is it?
No.
Okay.
No.
I'm his clone brother.
James isn't here.
Remember that conversation we had where I said they were, you know, almost identical down to the cellular level?
Right.
Well, that's why. Actually, you know, I'm so professional that I actually just found the notes where I wrote your little bio on. I'm so ashamed that I didn't list this. I mean, you are so accomplished. You're a Salon sex columnist, but Salon.com is having a little bit of financial difficulty right now, and so you're a former Salon sex columnist. I mean, why don't they dump, like, I mean, you're the only thing worth reading on Salon, in my opinion.
Well, thanks.
I mean, is that wrong of me to say?
That's not bad of you to say.
Garrison
Keillor might be upset. But.
you've written for The Village Voice, for Ms. Magazine. And you're working on a novel. I mean, after this show, it's probably going. You'll be working on a restraining order, but you're a delight to. You're a delight in all. You're the most delightful human being.
Well, she's already on the show, so you don't have to keep the flattery up.
That's my problem. I mean, I never know when to stop sucking up, right? I mean, so I would actually like to. Your columns are so fascinating, and there are a few that actually resonated with me deeply, and I would like to talk about a couple of them in more depth, if you don't mind. I don't know which way to go with this. I think the ones that I'd like to start with are the two different columns that you have about women who worked in prostitution, Pam and what was the other?
Mary Lou.
Mary Lou.
The teenager.
Right.
Yeah.
And.
Yeah, so this is actually something that DJ Corey and I had been discussing earlier. Like, so I've read a lot seen a lot of post-feminist writing about how prostitution should or can be viewed as women gaining power over men as like an act of rebellion against a social order. I'm thinking of, you know, like Annie Sprinkle's Holy Prostitute and things like this. However, in these two series of columns we talked about, one which was for our listeners who haven't read these columns, there's one is about this woman, Pam, who was recently divorced, was kind of working her way through the single scene, and at some point thought it would be fun or interesting to, like, start accepting money for sex and kind of dabbled in this, you know, in prostitution for a little while. And the other column was about Mary Lou, this teenage girl, I guess you could even say, like, who is a high-end prostitute, like, who originally started because of drug problems and kind of worked her way up and was kind of heading her way back down. Anyway, I digress. Reading these two columns, I came away instead with, like, this kind of overwhelming feeling of sadness. Like, these women who thought they were fighting back against men or reclaiming their own sexuality or living by their own rules actually kind of being used. And I was just interested in, I guess, in your views on this. Like, do you kind of agree with this feminist stance about – this post-feminist stance about prostitution being a way to gain power? Or have your own experiences with these two women in particular and others maybe – made you doubt that?
The reason that it was great to have the column format that was story rather than a polemic was for, I don't know the answer to that question. I came away from both of those people feeling that their prostitution experiences were sad.
Yeah. I mean, especially Mary Lou, who seemed to be on her way up and out, like was making money, was interested in getting a straight job.
Yeah.
an apartment. And then at the end, like in the last column, she was clearly sliding back down. Like it even started trading sex for drugs.
Yep.
It's back on crack.
Yeah. No, it was really sad. I was really rooting for her. And really the only success story for her would be to not be a prostitute anymore. She was sexually abused by her stepbrother.
Yeah, she had this horrific childhood, yeah.
Horrific childhood. Parents shuttling her back and forth, not wanting her. And it's kind of hard, especially when someone's still a teenager, to not see that as a symptom. I mean, it doesn't look like a healthy, empowering choice. And for Pam, same thing. It was punishment. It was self-degradation. I mean,
Sorry, Regina, I'm just going to interrupt you for a second. We're having a little bit of a technical problem, so can you speak, like, a little bit louder?
Okay, is that better?
I think so, yeah. Our producer says that's much better. Thank you.
Yeah, again, it seemed like Pam was getting into this because, oh, she thought it might be interesting, or, oh, good ways, revenge on men. But it didn't seem like that. Yeah, it seemed almost, what's the word, like she was, punishing herself or atoning for something.
Yes.
You know, like if I'm going to love sex, well, I'm a dirty person, therefore I should make myself feel dirtier by.
Well, and the whole thing, I'm forgetting, I think that this was in there, that she broke up her marriage by sleeping with her best friend's husband.
Right.
She had real specific things.
Yeah, that's true. I'd forgotten about that, but yeah.
And
become like the town or the neighborhood slut because of that, right?
Right. Yeah, and it was at the same time as just a ton of binge drinking and
right.
So. No, it didn't. I mean, I interviewed Annie Sprinkle, and I was very impressed with her, and she made me rethink a lot of things. But right. I think she's pretty unusual.
Yeah. I mean, she's definitely very, very unusual.
So for
I mean, the holy prostitute thing I can sort of buy coming from her. But, you know, she's a lesbian now. I mean, her career put her off sex with men in a way.
Actually, I didn't know she was a lesbian now. Interesting.
Yeah.
So for those of our viewers just tuning in, we're talking to Virginia Wittstum, a sex writer from Salon.com. And you just grunted at me. Why?
No, I was about to correct your pronunciation, but I realized it was correct.
Well, how about correcting him for saying viewers of the radio show?
Because
we're talking about our psychic viewers who are doing remote viewing of us.
And the specific comment we were talking about was, first Pam is in She Stoops to Conquer, which
right.
you wrote on November 2, 1999, and Mary Lou was the story of a young prostitute, June 27, 2000. And that's
actually four parts of that one, yeah.
Right. And so if you go to salon.com, you can look those up. I was actually going to – I think, Virginia, of your many talents, and they are legion – I think your biggest talent is actually finding fascinating little intriguing stories to tell. I mean, you put yourself in these kind of amazing, very interesting, very kind of intimate situations, and I loved reading your columns. Can I come over and touch you? but
you'll have to bring the viewers along.
I think you're going.
Oh, you're never going to let me forget that one. What was that? And the other funny thing is, I mean, well. We won't tell you until after. We won't.
What?
We're not sure.
I've never seen you so flustered before, DJ Corey. It's
you know,
cute.
I'm. Another thing that happens when you're a gay man is that you have a delayed adolescence. You know, you never go to your prom. You never go to dates with girls. You never do anything like that. And so, being with a real woman, who's, I'm feeling something's awakening inside me. So, Virginia, I was actually very interested in another column that you wrote called Crashing the Black Rose, because we've talked about the Black Rose on this show
right.
once or twice. And this is your column you wrote November 30, 1999.
Wait, people from Pittsburgh go to the Black Rose? Isn't it like a...
We're not total hicks here. We're the 25th largest city in the country and shrinking. And
No. I just mean I thought it was regional. I thought it was just the Washington area.
Well, fetish people. We know fetish people from here that went. I think people come from all over the country to go to the Black Rose. It's huge.
Yeah, it's
it was huge. No, it was the world's largest dungeon. They told me.
Wow.
So yeah, they took over a whole hotel.
Yes.
So the Black Rose, for those few listeners who aren't aware of it, is this kind of annual convention of people who are into bondage and discipline, and we've talked about it on the show. And you went there sort of. I was going to say not undercover, but you went there to sort of observe and to talk and to sort of meet the various. That's coming up, like, and it's coming up again this November
or
something.
Yeah, we were talking about even doing a field trip. Yeah.
Ooh, Virginia, you, that's where we could meet. I'll be like the fat guy holding the flog.
Oh, you'll really stand out.
So the thing that I actually found most interesting about this article is that, you know, again, in earlier when Dr. Sexopoulos mentioned that your columns sometimes have a different point of view from the standard kind of PC rhetoric. Again, here, you know, it didn't seem like you were. It seemed like you were a little bit uncomfortable with the Black Rose.
I didn't drink the Kool-Aid, no.
I sort of wanted to talk about that a little bit. I mean, so there were, you know, the BDSM practitioners would typically say, you know, it's all very consensual. We're consenting adults.
Yeah, we're intelligent adults. We know what we're doing.
This is just our way of having fun. Don't judge.
Oh, I don't dispute that.
But
however, you did notice, as we have it, this similar, you know, play party we once went to, that the power dynamic seemed to be deeply traditional in a way, right? It was men dominating women.
More than the opposite. Yes, that's true. I mean, there were some, you know, women leading guys around on little dog collars and stuff.
Right.
But mostly the men were the top and the women were the bottom.
So in my various BDSM experiences, I've had I found them all very interesting just because they were different. I mean, like in under the sense that you should try everything at least once.
Uh-huh.
I found my experiences kind of interesting, but none of my experiences have been sexual qua sexual. Did you see anything there that actually turned you on? That you actually thought, gee, I'd like to be in that, you know, rotating metal drum or.
Maybe do a little equestrian play.
I did interview a couple ponies.
Really? I found that, like, the most interesting and creepy part of that whole scene, like, that you were describing. For those of our listeners at home who aren't as deeply enmeshed into the world of freakdom as we are, these are people who, like, not dress up like horses in costume, but, like, act like horses, right? Like,
yeah.
Including, like,
no,
bridles
and
bits.
No, and they dress up. It didn't offend my sensibilities. It offended my cheapness. I couldn't believe how much money they spent on these custom-made saddles and bridles and bits that went in their mouths and, like, elaborate saddles where the rider either sat on their shoulders or they bent over, half over, and the supporting their hands on their knees and the rider sat on their back, sort of sloped up. And these incredibly hundreds of dollars, like, hoof stuff.
They wore hoofs?
Yeah.
Made out of what?
Like wood, and then they covered with leather.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was just amazing. The you know,
it sounds like
there was boots for sale. You should go if you haven't.
Like
it is pretty amazing.
It's almost less like sex than about the really cool paraphernalia.
Yeah, because that actually was the you know, big conference room where they were selling stuff.
Right.
Pretty fascinating.
Well, I'm having a hard time. I'm all set to go. I'm having a hard time convincing my co-host that he wants to go. He's got this kind of outdated notion of personal space.
Oh, nobody. No, I have to say, there's so many people who want to do it. They're not going to pick on somebody who doesn't. I mean, like, a couple sort of creepy guys were like, oh, we're going to have you into this by the end of the weekend. You know?
Yeah, yeah, you mentioned that in the column, that these kind of pushy dom men would tell you they were going, you know, you were going to be theirs by the end of the week or something.
Yeah.
But no, I don't have that worry.
And
no, it mostly, especially if you're there, you know, pulling out the notebook. That made me pretty much of a pariah. Nobody was gonna.
So, are you done with this? Could I?
Mm-hmm.
Did you want my?
Well, I had a similar question.
We have a dom sub relationship. My co-host can't speak until I give him the say so. So yes, you may present yourself.
I have for submissive mounting. No, so Actually, this Black Rose thing leads into a question I wanted to ask. I noticed in a lot of your columns that you seem very interested in role-playing, like the Black Rose column, the dressing room, which was the one about the man who called himself Tracy, and dressed up in this very kind of femmy clothing, like She Steps to Conquer, in your experiments in phone sex. What is it that interests you in particular about role-playing? And, like, where do you draw your own boundaries? Because as DJ Corey was hinting at, like, you were very interested in a lot of these role-playing experiences, but you did have boundaries, right? Like, you weren't going to participate in any S&M scenes. You didn't get naked for Tracy. So what about role-playing interests you?
Well, what about sex that's not in a marriage or some, or, you know, a long relationship isn't? I don't know. It's just an interesting question. It just seems like it's a big part of sex.
Right.
If you're going to take some aspect of sex, it's probably going to have that in there. Right?
Yeah. I agree that it's definitely part of sex, except for the columns I mentioned where they were all rather extreme versions of role playing, right? Almost so that the role playing itself was more important than the sex. You know, for the man Tracy, for example, right? He was
heterosexual.
Yeah, he was heterosexual, and yet he really really loved dressing up as I wouldn't even say woman, as a girl, right? And in fact, he was going to be having hormone treatments, which could adversely affect his sex life, and he was really into the role that he was playing. I mean, or do you just view these as kind of the extreme on a continuum that everyone takes part in all the time? Like we all kind of play little roles.
I guess, but why does it interest me? Probably it interests me because I probably have a little gender dysphoria. More in the feminist way than in the sexual way, of just kind of growing up and hearing, well, this is how girls are, and you're not going to be interested in that because you're a girl, and
right.
and just feeling that dissonance, feeling like, especially as a kid, that boys had the better deal. You know,
we can pee standing up.
You can pee standing up, and and you can just kind of just go out and do stuff, and you don't have to sit around and wait for it to happen to you. I guess would be the gist of it. That had me interested in transgendered people, I guess, especially people who just felt like I'm the wrong gender. And it was interesting to me what men would long for about being female.
Right. I guess I've noticed that, for example, with drag queens too, is they don't dress up and behave like women. They dress up and behave like
drag queens.
Well, yeah, like this kind of hyper-feminine version of what men think women are. Of course, I'm generalizing. I'm sure there are drag queens who dress up like average women and don't make a big show out of it. But
well, that's what these I call them Tracy in the column. Tracy. Mm-hmm. I did a huge, huge piece for the Washington City Paper about transgendered people in D.C. and
no. Can I interrupt you for a second? Normally, like, so personally, when I've heard the phrase transgendered, I always think of people who are kind of in the process at some level of gender reassignment.
Transgendered is anybody who feels like they're in the wrong body.
Okay. I'm so behind in my terminology. Okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
That's the big umbrella term. And I think I did a column on the female to male transgender convention.
Mm-hmm.
And their list of who was in there was hilarious. You know, bearded ladies, tomboys, butches. You know, it was just this huge, huge list of that was very funny altogether.
Oh, where the heck is that?
I have that somewhere.
But you were going somewhere before I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
No. So just that probably feeling that way growing up probably made me interested in people who wanted to role play with gender.
Did the actually, I'm curious. Did the I don't think I read this column about the female to male transgender people. Like, did they do the same extreme with men? Where like all these women dressing up as like construction workers and drill sergeants and cowboys? Were they like doing this hyper masculine stereotype, just as drag queens do this hyper feminine stereotype?
No.
No,
it's interesting. They actually were sort of like sweeter men who were better listeners. They were mostly feminists. you know, who sort of didn't like the way they were sort of out to make a gentler man.
So,
they were very different from drag queens.
So I found your column called Gender Wars. I just have to read this list because it is too good.
Is that list great?
Yeah. So I will. And the only danger here is that Dr. Successless might start getting aroused, but I'm just going to go with it anyway. The list is
aroused.
Butch, trans man, gender outlaw, transsexual, drag king, new man, boy chick. Ooh, I like boy chick. She bear, shapeshifter, trans fag, tomboy, F2M, passing woman, two spirit, Amazon, tranny boy, intersexual, female guy, trans, boss girl, GRRL, bearded female, transgenderist, Sir Kuramir, hermaphrodite, questioning, just curious, or a significant other, friend, family member, or ally.
Sofas.
That sounds like in 100 years, the census form will have all of those to check whether you're male or female. It'll take days to understand the selections.
So, as you were talking about this kind of this role-playing thing and this kind of intimacy thing, you weren't talking about intimacy, but I was reminded of this column that you did about the kissing booth, because I thought actually an incredible way of really putting yourself into a situation classically people say kissing is sort of one of the more, you know, the standard thing is that prostitutes don't like to kiss because
right.
it's the sort of most intimate sexual act. And there you are, once again, putting yourself in this situation, kissing strangers very sexually.
We should set this up for the listeners, right? Like, what she did is
controlling me.
I'm sorry. I want to incorporate our listeners into the process. So correct me if I'm wrong, Virginia, but what you had done is there was a white sheet with a cutout for your lips, and you projected images from a slide projector of movie stars, sex symbols, men on the men and women onto the sheet.
Right.
And people could pay a dollar to kiss you / the celebrity. Okay.
Right.
So that's the mental image for our viewers, listeners.
Good. Yeah, that was exactly what it is.
And so
you were going somewhere with this. Kind of about the role-playing?
Well, I was sort of hoping I could set it up and you'd take it away. I wanted to know, like, what it was like, and did you feel – I mean, how did you feel after the first – I mean, what was your skankiest moment, for example? Let's start there. Were there, like, leering teenage boys? Were there, like, old, creepy men? Were there,
this was
dead?
An art show. It wasn't – it was not such a
So there was sort of, like,
crowd.
Mostly unbathed kind of hippie.
The weirdest thing, which I put in the column, was when –
the man you had a crush on?
No, with the guy who he was pretty cute. Like, I peeked as he came up, and I was like, oh, okay, I won't mind kissing him. And he came, and he wasn't a good kisser. Like, he just shoved his tongue into my mouth, and then I broke off the kiss after, like, 6 seconds or something, and he said, I gave you $2. I was going to do more. I just thought that was hilarious that he was bargaining. Because the price was $1.
that was
strange. That made me feel, you know, like that weird kind of thing, I guess, that about paying for sex, and maybe this is why prostitution seems sad, is there's just something so hostile about somebody who doesn't want to have sex with you. It seems so strange to me that a purchaser of a prostitute could kind of get past that and not feel that hostility. And so that was weird. I felt like I was feeling that hostility. Like, you bitch, I gave you $2. I get to stick my tongue in your mouth for another 6 seconds. You know? It was weird.
Wow. Well, did you have your little, like, kind of a kissing booth pimp in back with you to sort of beat up
anybody? I had a friend come be my pimp, but then he needed to run the slide projector. It was supposed to go automatic, and of course it jammed. So, and then the place got really, really crowded, and he was across the room. I definitely needed a pimp because I hadn't really figured out the money exchange, so people were ending up sticking the money through the mouth hole.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, that's kind of an interesting image.
Yeah.
So, I think that, you know, now that I'm sort of in my mid-30s and just losing, you know, losing my attractiveness, I mean, maybe I should just set up a my own kissing booth, like in the middle of the, you know, at a toll booth somewhere, right? Or maybe in the middle of a public park.
I think one of Virginia's insights might be valuable to you, although in a different way. Like you mentioned that you had the lip hole, like at mouth height. You were not sitting down because you did not want, like, the glory hole aspect to come into play. So perhaps DJ Corey.
Again, I think, but so there's an issue. I mean, I think you perhaps were limiting the possibilities for your art. I mean, this is,
I'm such a wimp.
See, it's these boundaries again, you know, that keep.
I know. I'm no Anka. I need to really just go out there and do it.
Paul Anka? Who, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's interesting. I thought everybody knew who she was.
Oh, Anka Radakovich.
Yes.
who was living a lie, right? Like, didn't she keep on saying in her, she wrote this column for some magazine for
Details
right? And she kept on talking about how she was a 20-something. It turns out she was like 35 when she was writing these columns.
Even I have heard of this story.
Oh.
I mean, the interesting thing was that she lied on her resume because nobody hires anybody.
Right. She didn't think she'd be hired if they found out she was over 30. Because
all sex columnists are old. Kevin Bushnell's in her 40s.
Who?
Sex in the City, Candace Bushnell.
Oh, sorry, I don't have a TV. I'm out of tune with your Earth culture.
Well, even if you had the TV, I mean, she's not Candace Bushnell on the show, but they were from columns in the New York Observer.
Oh, okay.
Is what the show is based on.
Yeah, I guess a sex column written by like a 16-year-old would be pretty dull. Just lots of stuff about Justin Timberlake.
And I think people in their 30s just are more interesting about sex than people in their 20s. Especially women, because a lot sort of kicks in later.
See, this is what I tell the guys in the steam room. They're fresh from their little varsity workout, and I'm like, you know, don't be fumbling around with each other. Go, you know, with someone who's
the skilled, experienced,
skilled professional,
the kindly, yeah.
And what do? They just call campus security, and I'm hauled off campus again. Actually, I mean, speaking of stalkers, I actually wanted you to smoothly segue into a story. We're talking about. My co-host looked your name up on Amazon.com and found this book that, quote, you wrote
about. We think it's you. That
anthropology.
Were you an anthropologist?
I've never been an anthropologist, no.
But you edited this book about anthropology?
No, I had nothing to do with this book about anthropology. And it's, I mean, I guess you told your listeners how you spell my name, but that it's weird. It's a name that nobody else has.
And so there's this other identically named Virginia Vitstam. I selected the name out of the Salon column and pasted it into Amazon.
Well, I want people to look this up on Salon.com. Vitzthum.
Yes.
Okay.
So, well, that blows my whole question out of the water.
But there's an interesting story behind it.
Yes. How does the question get blown out of the water?
Well, my question was like, oh, so do you observe sex as an anthropologist? Your training, blah, blah, blah.
And I was
weaving a beautiful tapestry of ideas.
Sent me. One of the things she studies is breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, our fields kind of overlap.
Oh, wow.
But no, I was.
If this doesn't turn into a hot lesbian, you know, two-way,
right.
Like all the Virginia Vitsums of the world get together.
Right.
Wow, I'm going to be disappointed.
I was living in D.C., and I got this letter with my name spelled right, which doesn't usually happen. Doesn't know me, and I opened it up, and the Queen of Hearts fell out of the envelope.
Oh,
and I
God.
Opened up the letter,
that's disturbing.
And it said it was four, like, very neatly cursive pages of stuff like, Virginia, you are the Queen of Hearts, and we need to assemble all the hearts and get them on the boat and go to California so we can scatter my mother's ashes, and then once we're in California, the boat will be 3,000 feet long, and then we can... It went on like that for four, and it listed all the people who were hearts, and, you know, no names that I'd ever known, and, you know, just finished up, you know, call me, but not after six, because Jim knows what we're up to.
The blood of my victims cleanses the earth.
Yeah, it was
that's really,
really
disturbing.
Creepy and weird, and then I got... Who could this be? They spelled my name right. Is that, have they seen me in the city paper? Is this, you know, what could this mean? And then I got a second one that was more violent. Said, you are England and Scotland is a tumor that we need to cut off your back. I've made the first cut, but I'm going to have to finish the cutting next week. And she came and she put that one on my porch because she left me a coat and a Celtic calendar with it. So
wow.
She was
Jesus.
Starting to leave gifts. And,
so this was a woman. The stalker was a woman.
The stalker was a woman. The handwriting reminded me of my grandmother's. And she signed her name, which is great.
certainly helped the police.
Their name was Linda Cracker. K-R-A-K-K-E-R. And, yeah, so I went to my – I lived in this little tiny town called Mount Rainier, Maryland. And I went to the – I walked into the little, you know, one-room police station. And I said, I'd like to see the person here who's like Jodie Foster and Love.
You didn't say that. You said that?
We're like, ma'am, I'm the only one here.
Oh, that's so funny.
He reads the whole letter, you know, all the, you're the queen of hearts, and, you know, the guy, he goes, he looks up at me, and all seriously, he goes, I think we may be looking at a cult. I was like, oh, my God, I'm all alone. It was so then I went to the county police. Mm-hmm. And they, like, quickly found out, you know, oh, she's done this before. And I was still like, why me? Why me? Why me? And, like, 3 days after I went to the police, phone rang. And she goes, and is Virginia there? And she, hi, it's Linda. Linda Cracker.
Oh,
and I was
my gosh.
Like, you know, I started to, like, think all these things. Don't engage them. And yeah. I was like, but I couldn't. I was too curious. I said,
yeah.
Who are you and how do you think you know me? And she said, University of Michigan Anthropology Department. I said, what? I said, I've never been to Michigan. What are you talking about? And she goes, Virginia Bitstum, are you the anthropologist? You went to Michigan Anthropologist. I'm like, no, I didn't. That's not me. Please stop writing me. That's not me. And a friend of mine went on the web and was like, there is. There's a Virginia Bitstum who's an anthropologist. So I wrote her this letter. And I was like, I have a weird story for you, Virginia Bitstum. She's like, that's so funny because someone just wrote me and said, are you doing a sex column?
Oh, boy.
So it was, and then we, like, you know, became email friends.
Oh, that is so
wow,
beautiful.
That's hilarious.
Isn't that weird?
So this wasn't a cult. It wasn't a stalker. It was, like, a friend's.
It was the wrong Virginia Vista.
Friend's joke gone horribly wrong.
Well, I know. That was, like, the only, that was one option that I had never considered. That
well, yeah.
I wanted somebody else with my name because I didn't know there was anybody.
Well, so the other, so I'm a little bit slower than everyone else. The other Virginia Vitsum wasn't scared of what Polly Cracker.
Polly Cracker, you know, she said, you know, I knew her vaguely, but I have no idea. Her husband was in the program with me, but I have no idea why she would be fixating. Like, and then she said, then later she said, you know what? Somebody else we went to college with just got a letter from her. There's something. I mean, she's schizophrenic. That's it had all the signs of schizophrenic writing, and something about, like, the mid-'80s in Michigan, she just, like, zeroed in. And
well, there's that. I mean, but she's not talking about, you know, like, like Bananarama and the Go-Go's. She's talking about cutting out Scotland from England.
right. I mean, her personal vision.
I mean, so
that's, I should have said that. I was just, can we just talk about Bananarama?
Well, although Bananarama can mean different things to different people. Well, that's fantastic. And actually, I believe we have approximately one listener in our audience, and that may be, what's Mary Cracker? Is that her?
Linda Cracker?
Linda Cracker.
Three K's.
If you're out there, Linda Cracker, KK.
All is forgiven. I did find out from the PG County cop that she was institutionalized in St. Louis.
Well, that's. I mean, we at the show have nothing but the deepest sympathy for those who are mentally ill, although
mentally different.
But we just prefer that they stalk some other show.
Right.
So that's okay. That's fantastic. So I'm actually, you know, it's actually, I'm such a smooth host that this story has actually reminded me of the next story I wanted to ask you about. And this is the Percival story. This is if I'm getting that name right. This is the gentleman who was going to he was using BDSM and he was seeking out sort of a bondage master and seeking out sort of pain therapy, if you will, to sort of work through his own child abuse issues. And I thought this article was fascinating, although I can't find it right now. So,
but I read it too. I think I know what you're.
So tell us a little bit about that. How did
I was friends. I'm friends with the master guy. I called him Lee in the article.
Yeah,
I'm friends with him. And
oh, here it is. This is your June 1st, 1999 article.
Yeah. And he's a massage therapist. And I said, oh, you know, I'd love to do a column about how massage therapists deal with the issue of getting turned on.
Hmm.
You know, like, how do you keep touch non-sexual?
Hmm.
He said, I don't do that. You pay me to rub it, and I rub it. I said, oh, okay. And
oh,
then
awesome.
He started telling me, like, oh, yeah, and I'm working with this guy. I'm his S&M master, and he's working through child abuse. I was like, whoa, I think this is a better column than that one. I had no idea that he did all this stuff.
In your column on the phone, you mentioned that this person that you're calling Lee was actually a pretty extraordinary guy. I mean,
despite
having nice, I mean, not only did he have nice hands, but he also has some kind of spiritual, ethereal quality that makes him some kind of born healer.
Yes.
Which I found very interesting. So anyways, you're talking to him, and he starts telling you about this guy.
We're going to have
one of my first ones, and she's like, you are not being skeptical enough.
We're going to have to remind you that we're on the radio. We're going to have to remind you that we're on the radio.
And you just used you and your potty mouth used a bad word.
What did I say? Oh, gave me. Right, sorry.
Gave,
oh, my God,
gave
that's
you
so funny that that's
poo-poo.
Like the bad thing in the show. sorry.
It's all right.
Flack.
Yes. So there's your editor giving you flack.
Giving you the cabeza.
Because I, you know, interviewed them both, and did I watch a flogging? Interviewed them together and separately, and I just bought it. I mean, it made sense to me. And then she was saying, you know, this is crazy. You've got to, you know, be more suspicious in the way you write this.
Just to give our listeners a little more background, the thing that was interesting with this column is that this person is apparently very physically abused as a child, and he was going through
by his mother, by like his, age two,
right, like forcible enemas, and
so this is horrible. There's this combination of both kind of titillation and sort of this very vague kind of sex play with her, but also abuse and enemas and whippings and I guess various kinds of both pain and strange kind of incestual sexuality. And
yes.
So he was, I guess, reliving some of those scenes with this massage therapist. And but it was apparently very therapeutic for him to sort of be in the same situation, but to have it be safe and have it be. I think you made the insight in the article that the difference was that in these scenes that he was reliving, you know, they were cathartic for him because he was in control.
Right.
He could stop
at any
time.
They had their safe word that would make Lee stop. And it was very much. God, did they say slave master or daddy boy? I think it was daddy and boy.
Hmm.
So it was you know explicitly parental.
Hmm.
And, I think it wasn't so much.
Yes,
you know,
you
hurting him as ordering him to do things like you know being a slave.
So what was your editor after? Did she think that you had the real story here was something kind of sick and perverted, and you weren't questioning it enough,
you know,
or what was she looking for?
I think she thought that it was people putting a kind of new agey positive spin on kinky sex. Although she's pretty sex positive, so I don't think she would necessarily think, you know, that oh that's bad and it needs to be justified. But I think it was something like that, like she thought that they. She also thought that Percival, who's married, was probably gay and just not dealing with that, that he was probably in love with Lee, and that was a big part of it. And I wondered that, too, because he did say that he loves his wife and he wants to stay with her and their sex is very sweet and warm, but he had never been so excited and thrilled and, you know, gone to these amazing.
I seem to recall that you said that Percival's wife was supportive of these trips to Lee.
Yes.
And you know, on the same note, as a sex expert, do you sense the same kind of vibe in my co-host? Is he gay and does he crave having
the sweet taste of your lash?
I think he wants you.
If you were only in the room, you wouldn't doubt it. The tension here.
I'm actually in honor of you, Virginia. I'm wearing these kind of loose shorts and no underwear.
Ooh.
I'm swinging free.
How is that in honor of her, not like in blatant disrespect of her?
the show is just all sex positive, and I'm sitting here legs akimbo, ready to be mounted, or to mount, I guess. So back to you.
And I can't say giving somebody.
moving on from my peekaboo shorts for just a moment, the other thing I found sort of interesting about your columns was occasionally, you know, you really get the salon.com readers sort of fired up. You know, there's sometimes the letter, the mailbag is sort of overflowing with vituperative reactions. Am I using that word right?
Sure.
So, for example, I guess the Black Rose column caused a big stink among the listeners, among others. Do you have any sort of favorite sort of hate mail or positive or negative letters that you want to share?
Black Rose was the most. I actually didn't love them. I felt a little guilty. I had mentioned that a weirdly high percentage of the people at the Black Rose were fat. And I did feel it was a really striking visual image of the fat people in the harnesses going up and down the elevator in the Ramada Inn, and I I just didn't feel like I would be a real reporter if I didn't report that. But I also felt bad. I also felt like, I mean, that was one of the things, like saying also that I didn't want to be mean about guys I slept with. I felt like that. I felt like a way, when I decided to take the gig, that the way to write what was left out of most sex columns that I'd read and where there seemed like there was a niche that nobody was in was vulnerability. It seemed like nobody wrote about sex like that. It really is scary.
Right.
You know, and so I sort of thought, well, that's a good reason not to be scornful. It just seemed like so much of it was so, like, scornful and mocking and, like, people going to different events and going, ew, they think that's sexy? So I didn't want to say, like, hey, all these freaks, these fat freaks. So I felt guilty that I had called them fat and that they did indeed call me on it.
So. I mean, I read the column and, like, I just kind of passed right over that, I guess, because of my own experiences.
But I guess if you were there, that you would have felt.
But, I didn't find that you were being mean at all.
Yeah. And then the thing that we were talking about on the phone before, that I said I didn't... Like I said, yes, I believe them, that it is all consensual, and I know this, and I know this, and I know this, but it is still disturbing to me to watch a man whip a woman. It still looks like... It still looks abusive. And so all these people wrote and said, "What? She doesn't understand anything. It's not abuse." And they didn't really even read what I said.
Yeah.
But, you know, they just... They saw that and were like,
I am sort of wondering that since you live in New York now, which is, you know, home to, like, the most beautiful people in the world, maybe, if you lived in Pittsburgh where everyone is a little bit fatter, a little bit more normal.
Oh, I thought everybody looked like on Queer as Folk.
Well, that's right. Queer as Folk is very realistic. I mean, I go to the, what's it called? On the show,
the manhole,
Babylon. I go to Babylon every weekend. It's full of
hotties and supermodels.
Yeah, somebody was quoting Sandra Bernhardt or someone to me, like, "Oh yeah, right, like Pittsburgh on a Wednesday night is more happening." I guess a lot of people have a.
We're happening in town. I was.
I did a column about a guy in New York who will only date 10. And that actually turned out it pretty well.
Will only date tens?
In this beauty scale.
Right. How does he judge that? Like, is just meaning I'm only going to date, like, women so pretty they won't talk to me?
Pretty much. In a nutshell. It was really strange.
Because I did see – oh, I should take back what I said earlier. I did see one episode of Sex and the City with the modelizer.
Oh, that was an old one.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was actually taken from one of the columns. There was a column about the modelizer. Oh,
a man who
– Yeah, this guy was like a modelizer, except he wasn't – he's not – rich or handsome or successful.
does this man get any tens? I mean, or is this just a policy?
I asked him something. I was like trying to get at why, because the way I met him was he had dumped a, you know, seven or something, a friend of mine, who he would have sex with, but he would not have a relationship with because she was not a ten, and he told her that. And I told her, you know, I told her when I met her what I did. She goes, oh, my God, you have to write a column about this guy. And I was like, well, whatever. But then I met him. I was like, wow, this is kind of fascinating. Because, and I asked him, I was like, what is it? Why would you hold out for this? I said, is the sex better? And he said, are you kidding? Do you know how hard it is to have sex with these women? I never get to sex. It was very weird.
That is really strange.
I'm fascinated by this story. It's actually very complex. I mean, so did this man just enjoy sort of pursuing these women or just being seen with them? I mean, he evidently doesn't get to have sex with them.
He said he had had 4 2-year relationships, and 3 of them were tens, and 1 was B plus, but very brilliant.
Sorry, one of them was what plus?
B plus.
So,
you know, he mixed his scales.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not very scientific of him, right? If he's going to graph these things over time. So he actually, quote, get the 10 and, like, stay in a relationship
with
them.
He had gotten a few 10s.
So what did he have to offer? You said he wasn't rich or good-looking or artistic.
He's got a 10 between his legs, I think, as they say.
You would think that.
I don't know. He's funny. He's a comedian, but he's not that funny.
You're talking about Jerry Seinfeld.
He's not as funny as Seinfeld.
Carrot Top?
He's funny.
He's got to be funnier
about
than
the same
Carrot Top.
Looks as Seinfeld.
Intriguing.
Yeah.
But I guess that's what you can do in New York with a woman-heavy ecology, as it were. Because there are sort of like, what, 700,000 more women than men in New York City?
There are?
Really?
Yeah. I was reading this recently. There's more, many more women than men in New York City.
The deuce you say.
Really? Because you know why that doesn't make sense? It doesn't make sense economically. Because women are generally poorer, so why are there more of them in this expensive place?
But at the same time, like, there are more women in the world than men, too. So it is just an artifact of that distribution.
Maybe there's a giant government cloning center. Virginia, my producer is starting to give me a stern look, which means that we've gone a little bit over time.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry that it's been a delight to be with you. We're kind of – the hour's up.
Wow, maybe. It flew by, didn't it?
Well, you know, yeah.
When you're with me, some things go very fast, some things go very slow. Some things go
just
right.
But the burning
right.
Sensation never ends.
So, Virginia Wittstum, it was a delight having you on the show.
Thanks.
I'm sorry we have to go. This
okay.
Is, thanks for calling. I hope we can keep in touch and have
you
on again sometime.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell our listeners to go to salon.com, type in the search, the name VITZHTUM.
No.
VITZTHUM. Jeez. I'm such a
like
loser.
Vitz thumb.
VITZ.
No B.
It's spelled like Vitz thumb.
VITZTHUM.
Yes.
I apologize for that. Oh.
It's. Yes. Yeah. They're under the health section.
And this is WRCTV Pittsburgh. Please tune in next week, Tuesday at 11. Thank you, Virginia.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.